Canto 3, Chapter 3, The Lord's Pastimes, out of Vrindavan, text number 19. Is that right?
20.
Oh, 20. Okay, ready, eh? Yep. Snigdha smita valokena. Vacha piyusha kalpaya. Charitrenanna vajena. Shriniketana chatmana. Snigdha. Gentle. Smita avalokena. By a glance with a sweet smile. Vacha, by words. Piyusha kalpaya, compared to nectar. Charitrena, by character. Anavajena, without flaw. Shri, fortune. Niketena, residence. Cha, and. Atmana, by his transcendental body. He was there. He is who? Yeah, and where was he? In Dwarka. Yeah. He was there in his transcendental body, the residence of the goddess of fortune, with his usual gentle and sweetly smiling face, his nectarian words, and his flawless character. Purport. In the previous verse, it is described that Lord Krishna, being situated in the truths of Sankhya philosophy, is detached from all kinds of matter. In the present verse, it is described that he is the residence of the goddess of fortune. These two things are not at all contradictory. Lord Krishna is detached from the variegatedness of the inferior nature, but he is in eternal blissful enjoyment of the spiritual nature or his internal potency. One who has a poor fund of knowledge cannot understand this distinction between the external and internal potencies. In Bhagavad Gita, the internal potency is described as the para prakriti. In the Vishnu Purana, also, the internal potency of Vishnu is described as para shakti. The Lord is never detached from the association of para shakti. This para shakti and her manifestations are described in the Brahma Samhita 537 as ananda chinmaya. Rasa pratibhavitabhi. The Lord is eternally joyful and cognizant in the taste derived from such transcendental bliss. Negation of the variegatedness of the inferior energy does not necessitate negation of the positive transcendental bliss of the spiritual world. Therefore, the Lord's gentleness, his smile, his character and everything related to him are all transcendental. Such manifestations of the internal potency are the reality of which the material shadow is only a temporary representation from which everyone with proper knowledge must be detached. Om Agyana Timirandasya Yananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmaye Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mahiyam Dalati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Garim Yat Kripa Tamaham Mande Sri Rum Dinatarinam.
Uh,
Now, so two points or two elements of Krishna's character that appear contradictory, and so there may create a dilemma in the minds of the devotees, and certainly in the minds of the non-devotees who have difficulty understanding the spiritual or the transcendental nature of Krishna's pastimes. You know, there's the approach of the Mayavadis and the impersonalists, the Brahmavadis, where the negation of material attachment equates to the removal of all variety. Because in material existence, variety is the source of happiness, right? But it's temporal, it's limited and temporary, so therefore it is also gives rise to suffering, right? When you become attached to anything. Right? I have a nice pen, right? Because it's always good to write with a nice pen. But when I lose my pen, I get anxious. Right? What happened to my pen? Is it in the washing machine with my clothes? Did I leave it in the office? Where did I put it? You know, and eventually, you know, the pen is going to disintegrate and, you know, be gone. So whatever it is, pen, car, wife, family, you know, whatever it may be, whatever the source of enjoyment in the material world, it's also a source of happiness. It's also the source of distress, right? What's that verse? Yehi samspasa ja bolga. Dukka yona eva. No, what is it? Dukka je. Eva te, jonaya, dukkha jonaya eva te. Yeah, it means it's the source of, it's the birth of suffering. Dukkha means distress, right? Adyanta vanta kunteya, adi and anta, right? Adyanta means beginning and end. Adi, beginning, anta, end. So it has a beginning and an end. Adyanta vanta kunteya, na te shu, those, Buddha, those who are learned, na te shu, ramate buddha, don't look for pleasure in things that have a beginning and an end. Adyanta vanta kunteya, na te shu, ramate buddha. The wise don't look for pleasure in material things because there will always be some suffering. And so therefore Krishna recommends tatiksha, tolerance. You know, important element of our spiritual practice, our devotional practice, devotional culture is tolerance. What's that verse? Second chapter, text number 14, is it? Madras Pashash Tukunteya Sittoshna Sukutukadaha Agama Payano Nityas Tongues to Tikchas Paparata. One has to tolerate. The spirit soul is eternal, but we're in a material world and everything here is always in a state of flux, in a state of flow. Now, that state of flow and that activity that is present in the material world is also present in the spiritual world. but without the inebrieties of material existence. But for those who just look at things from a material perspective, they feel or they think that to remove all of the variety and to become absorbed into the Brahman is the goal of spiritual practice. Because removing all the variety, all of the variegatedness gets rid of your suffering. Of course, you've also got rid of your enjoyment as well. Just being equipoised in that Brahman focus or that Brahman realization. Of course, that's the beginning. Brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaneti sabjate. But the devotees, hearing from the authorities, understand certainly the Brahman is the all-pervasive spiritual aspect of the Supreme. But above that is the Paramatma. He's the one who rewards us for our, or he, not he, he provides the facility by which we're rewarded for our good karma and we're punished for our bad karma. Right? Situated within the heart of everyone. He's the witness. This is how everybody is provided for. Everybody's provided for by the presence of the super soul, who's the witness. So that's a superior feature of the Lord than the simple Brahman presence. They're both spiritual, purely spiritual by nature, and so therefore they're equal, but they have a different function or a different role. And then, of course, then there's Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who's the master, the Yogeshwara, the Ishwara, the possessor of all opulence, who displays transcendental activity at its best, at its topmost, in the form of Sri Krishna, in his various pastimes, the pastimes in Vrindavan, the pastimes in Mathura, the pastimes in Dwaraka. So he demonstrates how one should act. This is an important aspect of Vedic culture. That one should be regulated, that one should adhere to the principles of devotion. And these are all elucidated very clearly in the Bhagavad Gita, especially from the 9th chapter onwards of the Bhagavad Gita. We're given very, very specific instructions how to be a devotee. And that means then one will automatically adhere to these transcendental activities, or one will follow these transcendental activities in the midst of the comings and goings of the material world, in the midst of the beginning and the middle and the endings of material existence and material relationships. The relationships that exist in the spiritual world are permanent and eternal. And so they don't have the inebriety or the bad taste that comes with relationships in material existence. And you know, this is self-realization, knowing what activities are part of the transcendental or spiritual realm and what activities are part of the material realm, just looking after the body. You know, most people, as Prabhupada points out, most people in this day and age are concerned about looking after their body. Right? Ahara nidra bayam maitunum cha. Right? Eating, sleeping, mating and defending. Right? This is what most people are concerned about. The devotees understand, certainly, yes, we have to do eating, sleeping, mating and defending. These things are required. But they're all done in the context of spiritual relationships, as opposed to material relationships. It appears to be material, But the context of a devotee's activities are always in relationship to Krishna. What does Krishna say? Manmana, always think of me. Think of me. Right. So our act, you know, to become a devotee, Krishna gives us some pretty interesting instructions, especially in the 9th chapter. It's about being a devotee. I woke up this morning at 2:30 to go to the bathroom, and I was thinking about this point. It's not very difficult to be a devotee of Krishna. All you have to do is think of Krishna, because we are thinking about ourselves most of the time. But if we want to become devotees, then we should think of Krishna. That's what we should do. And then thinking of Krishna, manmana bhava mad bhakto, have a guess what? We become a devotee. That's what a devotee does. Of course, it doesn't mean that we only think about Krishna, because Krishna means Krishna and Radharani, Krishna and the Shakis, Krishna and the Manjaris, Krishna and all of the devotees, like Prabhupada says. When the king comes, so does the queen, so do the maidservants, so do the servants, so does the, you know, his coach, the horses. What's that? There's that nursery rhyme of Humpty Dumpty, right? Humpty Dumpty sat on the wall, right? Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. All of the king's men, what is it? How does it go? All the horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty Dumpty together again, right? So all the horses and all the king's men, plus the king and Humpty Dumpty. We've forgotten who Humpty Dumpty was, but I think he was some political personality of the, you know, 16th or 17th or 18th century. So and it's just, you know, it's not just the king, but it's the king and his horses and all of his men. So many relationships. When it means thinking of Krishna is quite a dynamic activity, a very dynamic, and it's multifaceted. Means understanding all of these relationships and working according to understanding those relationships, what's pleasing to Krishna. And sometimes what's pleasing to Krishna is looking after Krishna's devotees, not looking after Krishna. Right? It says that you can be doing your puja, and if a devotee comes, you can get up and welcome the devotee and neglect your puja, right? In the nectar of devotion. Right? Now, why is that? Why is neglecting Krishna pleasing to Krishna? You would think that if we're supposed to think of Krishna and serve Krishna, that we should just keep serving Krishna and that's all we should do. But the reason why neglecting Krishna's seva is pleasing to Krishna is when it is in relationship to his devotees and serving his devotees. So when a devotee comes, it's okay to greet them and welcome them, and then, of course, you go back and finish off your puja. Right? Don't forget, you know, forget Krishna looking after the devotees. So there's a, you know, it's multifaceted. It requires some deep understanding of the principles of devotional culture and understanding what pleases Krishna the most. Even though Prabhupada says, Krishna will never preach to the demons. Right? They're just a waste of time. But the devotees go out of their way to preach to everybody, demons included. Right? So Prabhupada says, sometimes the devotees are even more merciful than Krishna. Right? This is the quality of a devotee. Very, very compassionate. And always engaged in devotional service under the shelter of the Daivi Shakti, or here the Para Shakti, the Para Prakriti, Actually, the prakriti also describes the living entities, right? And the prakriti describes the internal or spiritual potency of the Lord. In our proper position, in our proper state, we should be engaged in Krishna's service. But the Maya Shakti, the Apara Shakti, has the ability to pull us down and cover us over. That's Maya's job. But Krishna is never under the influence of the Apara Prakriti. He's always under the shelter of the Para Prakriti, or the internal potency. And when we look at Krishna's pastimes, we see him engaging in all of these varieties of activities. And they're all purely spiritual, under the auspices of the superior energy, Antaranga Shakti. Antaranga Shakti means the internal potency. Bahiranga Shakti means the external potency. We want to become under the influence of the internal, the Antaranga Shakti, because that's where we actually come from, or where we should reside. And so that's why we engage in, you know, Prabhupada says that we should understand the activities of just looking after the body. We have to understand the activities of looking after the body, right? What happens if you don't understand the activities of looking after your body? What can happen? Get sick, die, you know. Walk around with no clothes on. Well, behave like an animal, basically. Right? Don't understand the courtesies, don't understand the proper interactions. Right? Just like Ajinta Rinpoche mentioned to me yesterday, she said, you know, we were so stupid, we were so foolish. We were given so much good advice, but we just ignored it. Right? When you're a child, when you're a teenager, one of my friends Enzo was telling me next door, his daughter's now getting to 14 or 15. He said, oh boy, life's getting hard now. And he was telling me, he said, you know, when you're a parent, he said, you can be, he said, I'm normally a pretty relaxed, tolerant person. He said, but when it comes to your kids, you fly off the handle really quickly. Right? Why? Because, you know, you invest, well, you know, when it starts off, the children take your advice. They do what you tell them to do. But then when they grow up, they start saying, you know, see you later, mate. Who do you think you are? Not in Indian culture so much. I'm sure it happens. But certainly in the modern Western culture, you know, you finally wake up to the fact that your dad's an idiot. Right? But then later on you wake up to the fact that actually he wasn't such an idiot after all. Actually he was right, you know, mostly 99% of the time. Maybe even 100% of the time. So, we're being given good advice how to look after the material body so that it supports our practice and engagement in spiritual activities. And so we have to know the difference between the both and what's appropriate. Yuktahara viharasya. Yukta kama sachetasu, yukta swapna vabodasya, yoga bhavati dukkaha. What's the proper balance? Life is, you know, a lot of the time is about getting the balance right. When you're riding a push bike, right? It's all about balance. The only problem is, you know, we get unbalanced. fall off. And we go, what happened? Get back up again. We fall asleep, especially devotees. We tend to fall asleep about things. Just like Ginger Rebo was travelling to Vrindavan one time, and then there was a scooter in front, and all of a sudden the scooter just went off the road, and the guy fell off. He's travelling at about 60 kilometres an hour, 40 kilometres an hour, whatever. Cars don't drive that fast in India. And then, Gopal, the taxi driver, just laughing. He fell asleep. Right? So we're supposed to, work out the balance, because we have to look after the body. We can't neglect it. This idea of renouncing everything, being detached, has its limits. If you try to become completely detached, then you just make yourself unbalanced, sick. To be too renounced, like we were discussing the other day. We can't imitate the activities of the Mahajanas or the very elevated devotees. Raghunath Das, 6 drops of buttermilk every second day. We can't possibly do that. That kind of renunciation only comes when one is deeply, deeply absorbed in one's Nitya, Siddha, position. Completely, deeply absorbed in his eternal relationship and service to Radha and Krishna. Then he's able to be completely detached from what's going on in the physical world. So, the real renunciation comes from being engaged in devotional activities, utilizing the material facility to support spiritual life. And so therefore we have to learn what is material activity, what is spiritual activity. We've got the nectar of devotion, we've got the Srimad Bhagavatam, especially to start off with the Bhagavad Gita. If we want to be joyful and blissful and full of knowledge, then we have to learn how to balance our lives in such a way so that we fulfill our material responsibilities, but we use the rest of the time for engagement in devotional activities. We do it slightly differently. We rest. The body needs rest. We have to sleep. We have to eat. Oh, speaking of which, looking forward to breakfast. Stomach ragas. It's the fresh air down at the farm. I reckon that's what does it. When I go down the farm, I get hungrier. Right, the fresh air. Plus, walking up and down hills and stuff. Bit of exercise. So, we rise early in the morning and we do our spiritual practice. We do our sadhana early in the morning so that we can remain fixed in our devotional consciousness, in our service attitude. And then in the rest of the day, we then engage in activities of devotional service that are connected to Krishna. Primarily we recommend that. Of course, if you're a pujari, then you do your service in the morning, then you chant your rounds later on in the day. That's your service. So, sometimes we have to balance it out. Go to the market in the morning or do some cleaning, paraphernalia, whatever, cook an offering. Then later on we have to then do the... Because that's a spiritual activity. We shouldn't see the activities of devotional service as material activities. They're all purely spiritual. And we keep that perspective, that balance, by making sure that we're deeply connected to the Mahamantra when we're chanting Hare Krishna. This is why we recite the 10 offences in the morning. We don't recite the 10 offences so that we commit them all day long. Right? We recite the 10 offences so that we can identify what they are and then pull them out, root them out and get rid of them, so that we have that deep connection to Krishna. That's our yoga. This is our yoga practice. really, you know, it hinges pretty much on not only, but our devotional practice hinges, its success hinges on how well we chant Hare Krishna. I mentioned this the other day. How well we chant. That's because we're calling out to the para prakriti, to the superior energy, Hare Krishna. Please engage me in your service. Then we'll remain under the protection of the para prakriti. Just as Krishna is always, our tendency has been to not be engaged in devotional service for lifetime after lifetime. So we shouldn't be surprised when we wake up in the morning and we find that we our mind is distracted to other things. Right? It's not unusual. Right? It's not unusual. So we shouldn't be surprised. Uncountable lifetimes of material engagement. But our bhakti yoga practice is so potent and powerful that it can counteract the activities of all of those lifetimes of inauspicity, as Prabhupada says, inauspiciousness, and more. Right? The holy name is so potent and powerful. But of course, if we're detached from chanting Hare Krishna, or you know, we're chanting Hare Krishna, but it's not done with the required amount of focus, then of course we'll still be bewildered and still be looking at the material energy and not quite working out what it is we should be doing. But if we absorb ourselves in the devotional practice, in the devotional process, which means, you know, making sure we've got the energy and the enthusiasm, the determination and the patience to chant Hare Krishna properly, then we can get that spiritual connection and we can live in that realm of, what is it here? Ananda Chinmaya Rasa Pratibhavita Bhi. The eternally joyful and cognizant, tasty world of transcendental bliss, devotional service. We don't negate everything. This is the what does Rupa Goswami say? Renouncing things which can be used in Krishna's service is considered to be false renunciation. So we have to learn this art of yukta vairagya, of engaging things in devotional service so that our material activities are at a minimum. Just like Maharaj Yudhisthira, he was enjoying the facilities of life. So, you know, as a devotee, doesn't mean we can't enjoy the facilities of life, but we can't become overly affected by them, because we'll then lose our grasp or our grip on devotional activities. But we do the material activities enough to support and maintain our spiritual practice, our devotional service. And if we do that, then we will be protected by the paras shakti, the internal potency, and we'll be steady and happy and knowledgeable. Even when the devotees are in Maya, they know more than the karmis. At least, you know, we know, oh boy, I'm in Maya today. The karmis are in Maya and they don't know it. They think that being in Maya is normal. And when we tell them it's not, they get very upset. Right? Yeah. The Lord's gentleness, his smile, his character, and everything related to him are all transcendental. So all of our activities should be connected to Krishna. Then they'll be transcendental. Such manifestations of the internal potency are the reality, of which the material shadow is only a temporary representation from which everyone with proper knowledge must be detached. So in one sense we enjoy it, but we know that it's limited and temporary, and that the source of real happiness is our eternal engagement in devotional service, in devotional activities. The activities that we perform here under the auspices of the internal energy, even though they appear to be material, they are not. And they're the engagements of the spiritual realm. Even the preaching. Or especially the preaching, because that's the demonstration of compassion, which is one of the qualities of Krishna, and certainly one of the the badges or the emblems of devotional service is that a devotee is compassionate, and we manifest that compassion. Lord Chaitanya, Krishna manifests that compassion through the Sankirtan movement, giving people an opportunity to engage in the devotional service. You know, in one sense, this is the Vedic culture. The Vedic culture is not necessarily, although it can be, or it is, a style of dress. In one sense, but it's more than that, much, much more, it's much, much deeper than that. It's the behavior, it's the engagement, it's the interaction, it's the cultivation of knowledge. In one sense, as mentioned in the previous purport, our devotional culture measures advancement in terms of detachment, yes, but in terms of knowledge. This is why the brahmanas ideally are given the topmost position, because they should demonstrate learning, jnanam, right? Jnanam, knowledge. But the test of a brahmana is not how many shlokas he can recite, but how he's able to put that knowledge into practice. The test of a guru is when we hear from the guru, our material problems should be dissolved. That's the test. So the test of a brahmana is that they're learned, but not just learned, because anybody can learn words, times tables, right? When we were kids, we did our times tables. 2 times 2 is 4, 2 times 3 is 6, 2 times 4 is 8, right? And now you could recite that like a parrot, right? But if you can't add up we learn how to use math when we open up our wallet, right? Isn't it? This is where we learnt math. We got the basics at school and the times tables. But we really put it into practice when we start buying and selling. Because then we start counting, and then we realise, hey, hang on a second, you just ripped me off. Or I just ripped him off. Right? Because we can count. So the practical application is, it's important to know how to add up, divide, subtract, and multiply, right? It's important to know those things, but you also got to be able to put it into practice. So the test of a brahmana is jnanam vijnanam. How to apply it. Ashtikyam. And ashtikyam means adhering to the devotional culture, to Vedic culture. So the emphasis, for us in Vedic culture is knowledge, but not just, book learning, Prabhupada says, practical application. We're not, what does Prabhupada say? We're not armchair scholars. Right? We just read the books and then just talk. We put it into practice. Has to be put into practice. And then that practice, in the context of Vedic culture, you know, it doesn't mean that you, tie your hair up, got lots of hair on your head, and then you tie it up and put a bun coming out here. Or you tie your dhoti in a, you know how to tie your dhoti in 6 different ways. Right? Or even necessarily that you can play the mridanga, you know, in 50 different beats. Right? I mean, it's good if you can. Right? But just because you can doesn't necessarily make you a devotee. Because, those things are, in one sense, they're kind of external. You know, just like we think, we become a devotee, then we have to learn everything. We've got to learn the obeisances, we've got to learn the Panchatattva Maha Mantra, we've got to learn the Maha Mantra, we've got to learn the Govindam prayers, we've got to learn the Sringabdev prayers. What else do we have to learn? The 10 offences, Mangalati, the Guru Vashtakam, Guru Vandana. We have to learn all of those things. We have to learn how to put on a dhoti, how to put on a sari, how to put on tilak. So, there's a certain point where a bhakta or a bhaktin or a devotee learns how to do all of the external things. Then they think, oh, phew, now I made it. Huh? But just because we can do all of the external things of a devotee doesn't mean that we've made it, actually, because, the real work of a devotee is going on internally within the heart in trying to connect to Krishna and connect with his devotees and connect with devotional service so that we're actually, so we're engaged according to our nature properly so that we can sustain it and keep developing those relationships. So that's astikyam, the culture of devotion, the mood of devotional service, beginning with manmana, thinking of Krishna. Bhava mad bhakto, become my devotee. Mam, what's the next? Namaskuru, offer our obeisances. What's the next one? Offer what we do to Krishna. Isn't it? Mamana Baba Madbhakto Madhyaji. Yeah, Madhyaji. Mam Namaskuru. Yaji means, what's Yaji mean, Gopa Vrindesh? Homages? No, Mam Namaskuru. Namaskuru is Namaskar, right? Namaskaro, right? Nama, not me. That's what nama means. Right? Not me, but Krishna. Mam yaji. What's mam yaji mean? Anybody know? Or we have to look it up. Is it what it says? Homage. Homage. So what do you do when you do homages to Krishna? Prayers? Yeah, offer prayers. But, it means giving up everything ultimately for Krishna. Namaskuru, manmana, always thinking of Krishna. What is it? What's next? What's the next verse? Yat karoshi, yad ashnasi, yaj jahosi, dadasi, yat. Yat tapasya sakuntaya. Mat kurusva madapranam. Yeah. So everything ultimately done for Krishna, everything sacrificed for Krishna. That's our, that's our culture. So in one sense, we can give up, we should be able to give up anything in the material world for Krishna's service. Or we, conversely, we engage everything in Krishna's service. This is the mood of renunciation of the devotees. Okay, I might finish here. Does anybody have any comments or questions? You know, the problem comes when you think that what you're doing is serving Krishna, but actually it's more what you want to do. So we have anattas arise as a consequence of the performance of devotional service. They're the things to be watched out for. Arjun. Yeah, that's compassion. You just like to hear the sound of your own voice. I'm preaching. Boy, I sound good. Huh? Yes, but you're following the instructions of Krishna and we're immature. Our devotional service is immature, and so therefore, in that immature state, we mistake devotional activities for material activities and material activities for devotional activities, and so therefore we get a bit confused sometimes. But we should understand clearly that when we're... And preaching is not just talking to people. Preaching is a whole range of activities, behaviour. You know, like I mentioned the other day, how people come into the temple and they notice the atmosphere changes. Right? They notice it. Intangible. Yeah. It's intangible, yet at the same time, it's noticeable. You know, you can't quite. So that's the bhakti ras that's created by the service to Radha Balava, the service to Gaur Nitai, the service to Jagannath Balarama Subhadra, and the service to the devotees. The glorification of the spiritual master, the glorification of Krishna. That creates a intangible but at the same time perceivable or what's the word? Just like Prabhupada says, when you go to Vrindavan, you can feel inspired in devotional service. When you come to the temple, we feel inspired in devotional service. So, you know, sometimes we might come to the temple in the morning and, you know, we look around and we think, oh boy, what are all these materialists doing here? Huh? We find faults with the devotees. Why doesn't he do that? Why does she do that? So we, you know, our perspective on things is a little warped. Huh? But as we chant Hare Krishna, as we see the deities, as we worship Prabhupada, as we do all of these activities, then our perspective starts to change. It is said in Jagannath Puri that when the demigods look at the dham, then they see all of the residents of Jagannath Puri as residents of Vaikuntha with four arms. Right? So actually all of the devotees here are residents of Vaikuntha. Although our particular realm of Vaikuntha, you don't have four arms. Right? But if we had the vision of the demigods, we could see all of the devotees are residents of Vaikuntha. Huh? Do you see that when you walk in the temple room? Who do you share the bedroom with? Huh? Yeah. You wake up in the morning and you think, God, that guy snored all night. How can he be a resident of Vaikuntha? I'm surprised that Krishna hasn't kicked him out by now. Huh? So we tend to look at each other from a material perspective, but we shouldn't. We should be seen from the spiritual perspective. Huh? This is Maya's trick, actually. Maya has a pulling down potency. Right? So one of the ways she tricks us is in seeing the devotees as mundane people. Because when we first joined the temple, certainly when I first started going to the temple, and I thought, oh, wow, these guys are so spiritual. I was very inspired. Then after a couple of weeks, I said, oh, he does this and she does that, and oh, boy, he drives me nuts. Right? So then you start to build a different perspective on life. So we have to be careful about that perspective. We have to see things clearly from the spiritual point of view. So it may feel sometimes like it's a material activity or material actions, but actually it's not. That's Maya's trick. That's the external potency covering us so that we're not actually able to see what's going on internally. And you know, devotional service is not looking at the external layers, but looking very deeply at what's going on internally. Isn't it? Ideally. So even if we see a devotee has some difficulty, we don't judge a person's advancement by the difficulties that they have, but we judge them by the attachment that they have for chanting Hare Krishna. This is what Haridas Thakur says. Right? And also then the learning that they have, and then the detachment. That's kind of like the perfect devotee in one sense. Very learned and very detached, but still able to effectively engage and interact in society. You know, just like we see that with the six Goswamis, Dhira, Dhira, Jana, Priya, Priya, Karo, that they were dear to everybody, because even though they were very detached from material life, they still had the learning and the understanding to be able to give all different levels of devotee the kind of advice that was beneficial for them and helped them make spiritual advancement. Right? So, you know, the villagers would come and talk about their business problems or this problem or that problem, and they'd be able to instruct them. But at the same time, connect them to their devotional service. So, you know, a devotee on the one hand is very renounced, but, you know, Prabhupada is a very good example, but then at the same time, very capable of just giving people good advice, right? So that they would then respect the sadhu, because he's practical. Had a sense of humour. Right? Or like Maharaj was saying the other day, yesterday, devotee is very humble. He thinks himself lower than a worm in stool. What does he say? Krishna Das Kaviraj. Anybody who sees me loses all of their pious credits. Right? Anybody who looks at me loses all of their pious credits. What was the other thing? There was another thing as well. I can't remember. But anyway, you know, that's the mood of a devotee. But at the same time, he's very, you know, now ordinarily if you think that you're lower, you know, you're a worm in stool, what is that a symptom of? If you think that if people look at you, then they lose their pious credits, what is that a symptom of? Huh? Yeah, weakness. Depression. Yeah, weakness. But it's not in the case of a devotee. It's a sign of great strength, because he knows, by the mercy of Krishna, anything is possible. Right? By the mercy of the Guru, anything is possible. Mukam karoti vatsalam. The dumb can speak. The lame man can cross mountains. So, you know, the devotee is very practical. And able to enter, you know, just because he's detached doesn't mean that he's so totally aloof, you know, that he just rejects everything. It's a practical realization and understanding of life. We may not feel advanced, but that's good, actually, when you think about it.
Maharaj was saying the other day that
Yes, we are. This is the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya. Chaitanya Leela. What? Chaitanya Leela, Krishna Leela. And I was saying the other day, you know, we get two for the price of one. In the Sankirtan Leela, you get to engage in the Sankirtan Leela and in Radha Krishna pastimes as well. So we have a very, very special deal on at the moment. We're selling devotional service half price, actually. There's a part of Gokul which is called Navadvip Dham. That's where the Sankirtan party is chanting Hare Krishna with Lord Chaitanya all the time. Feast, what did Prabhupada say? Chanting, dancing, and feasting. What's the problem? What's the difficulty? That's going on in that section of Gokul, where Lord Chaitanya is, the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. Okay, we should now go and enter into the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, especially chanting the verse Sarira Avijja Jal. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhaktavinoda ki jai.